Are you sure?
Here's the 30-second lesson on what legends know. Never ask a bride why she's getting married. Don't wear a skirt on a windy day. Deodorant is not a shower. Don't sniff chili flakes. And don't forget, saving is not investing. Legends don't just save, they invest in mutual funds. Mutual fund investments are subject to market risks. Read all scheme-related documents carefully.
As you might have noticed, I've been spending some time in Karnataka, particularly in Bangalore or Bengaluru city and around it, because that's where the first round of voting has to take place there. Half the seats of Karnataka have to go to the polls later this week on Friday. So one of the takeaways is the state of the city of Bengaluru. Now that is something, the state of our big cities is something that I've been writing about for a long time. The first time, in fact, National Interest featured that problem in India, the governance of our big cities and why our big cities are so messed up, was in 2005. A decade after that, I actually started a column, and I will come to that by saying that, what do you think of a columnist who uses an anniversary of one of his own columns to write something else on the same subject? So I am doing that once again now. This is also a kind of anniversary, almost to date. So I've been floating in Bangalore last week, Bangalore and around. In fact, that's the reason you might have seen Kartak Tatar go missing for a couple of days, because I was just traveling, watching some elections and checking things out on the ground, because that's very important. In that process, I also figured that the belief that we have had for a long time that India's big cities suffer from the idea that they are the capitals of their states. That is so true, and that is something that afflicts every major city of India. That is also the capital of that state. That includes Bengaluru, which is the capital of Karnataka. So what is it? What is it that we've been harping on? In fact, I had said 5 years back, almost to date, that is 20th of April, that can there be anything more pretentious and lazy for a political and current affairs columnist like me than to use anniversaries of one's own writings or ideas to revisit them? So exactly 5 years ago, I wrote this, and in this article, I was referring to something that I had written exactly 10 years before that. So what I'm now talking about is an idea that's gone on for 20 years. The first one was sparked by the crisis in Mumbai. Remember, that's when Mumbai had the big sudden rain and flood. Lots of people died. Lots of people got stranded. And India faced the humiliation globally of having to airdrop food in its biggest metropolis, the most economically vibrant metropolis. In fact, the main engine of India's economy. And that is when this thought had first come up, and then it's been revisited again in the past, and now visiting Bengaluru. So Bengaluru traffic, in fact, you ask any Bengalurian and they will tell you some jokes. Sometimes they are angry, oftentimes they are angry, but oftentimes they are also good humored about this, because I think the most philosophical thing I've heard from somebody in Bengaluru about their traffic is that, see, why complain that it took you 45 minutes reaching from one point to the other, though the distance is only 2 kilometers. Just look at it like this, that you sat in the car, you played with your phone, maybe you surfed your laptop or maybe read a newspaper. And while it didn't seem like you were moving anywhere, you got to your destination. That said, the fact is that the city's traffic has been a mess. Right now, they are building a metro. Some of it's built, but a lot else is being built, which is true of all our cities. But Bengaluru today, it's the third metro in India. It's also the most energetic metro, because this is also where the main locomotive, the main engine of the startup system, the startup train is located. It's also India's tech capital and services industry capital. That's driving India's economy. So traffic's been a problem, and traffic's been spoken about for a long time. Now, it also has a very serious water problem. Very serious water problem. To the extent, I mean, we know that shortage of water, that water crisis has actually emptied out cities in the past. Cities have become ghost cities. We also know that crisis with water have actually finished civilizations. Now, this is not that era. Cities will not become ghost towns. and civilizations will not vanish. But in this time and age, to see India's most vibrant city to have this kind of crippling water shortage, this again makes us revisit many of these ideas. And that's why the problems of our urban centers, particularly our big cities, is also the theme of today's Cut the Clutter. This will also have a fair dollop of opinion, because that is something that I've been talking about and writing about for quite some time now. As I told you, the first time we talked about this issue in detail was 2005, after the great Mumbai flood. So then in 2005, National Interest, and that article was Liberate Our Cities on August 6, 2005. I had raised a fundamental question on the rotting state of our cities. And the question was, do they languish because they are reduced to being colonies of large states to which they belong? Is it that our politicians have their votes in the hinterland of large states, so collect their power by winning elections there and then use it to lord over the big rich cities? Or, to put it more charitably, more accurately, collect their votes in the countryside and then check out their fungibility with cash in the cities. I've got votes, you've got cash, I'll make an exchange. Particularly if they also happen to be state capitals and thereby the seats of power. Is that why Mumbai, Kolkata, Chennai, Hyderabad and Bengaluru, they've all rotted over time? Maybe Hyderabad a bit less than the rest, because a lot of new Hyderabads got built lately. But all these decades, these cities generally wilted and rotted, while Delhi has improved comparatively, or by even bureaucratic Chandigarh. More Sarkar per square foot than any other part of India has generally survived. Do the villages have disproportionate vote power and similarly cities disproportionate money? You see how this works. I can take you to any of India's big cities, but in this case, because the context is Bengaluru and Karnataka, let's stay with Bengaluru. So if you drive out of Bengaluru towards South Karnataka, where the first phase of elections is taking place, that is Gowda land in a way, that's also the Bokalinga heartland, the Gowda family has its seats there, the general Mysuru area. That is the area where Gowdas have political power. That's also the area which is very vital if Bengaluru has to find an alternate. That's why the old idea has been a Bengaluru-Mysore infrastructure or industrial corridor. 1995, a delegation had come into Bengaluru led by the then governor of Massachusetts, William Weld, in 1995. And they had then signed a memorandum of understanding with Karnataka government, then headed by H.T. Devegowda. And that MOU was about building an infrastructure / industrial corridor between Bengaluru and Mysore. Now, ultimately, a result of that was the idea that a new infrastructure corridor should be built around Bengaluru. So this is like a ring road around Bengaluru, and also a highway connecting Bengaluru with Mysuru. So Mysuru could then become a kind of alternate to Bengaluru industrially or economically, just as in the course of time, willy-nilly or serendipitously, Pune became to Mumbai. In fact, so much of the IT industry has now come up in Pune. That's a gift to Maharashtra. Would not have happened if that one expressway had not been built linking Pune with Mumbai. That was thanks to Nitin Gadkari, who was then a young PWD ministry in Maharashtra. In fact, that one example underlines to us the value of investing in our big cities and also building infrastructure in the big cities. That is the idea which 1995 came up in Karnataka as well, particularly concerning Bengaluru. So the outcome of this was something called the NICE Highway. NICE Highway and Infrastructure Project. What does NICE stand for? NICE stands for Nandi Infrastructure Corridor Enterprises Road. This was to link Bengaluru with Mysuru with a highway, and then also build a ring road around Bengaluru. Then what happened? H.T. Devegowda, who was then chief minister, lost power. In the course of time, Congress Party came to power, S.M. Krishna came to power. H.T. Devegowda and S.M. Krishna had their old rivalry. By this time, a contract had been given out to build this infrastructure corridor to a company, and that company was called Nandi Infrastructure Corridor Enterprises Road. And that was headed, the contractor or the builder who got the contract to build the whole project was a man called Ashok Kenny. Ashok Kenny was a bit of a maverick. He was also an engineer and a very successful entrepreneur in Massachusetts. You remember that first MOU was signed between the governor of Massachusetts and government of Karnataka. Ashok Kenny had built quite a bit of infrastructure successfully in Boston and elsewhere. In fact, in 1987, he had also got from Ronald Reagan the US Presidential Award for as Outstanding Businessman of the Year of a minority community. So he came back to India in 1990s. That was the reforming India. He got the contract or he got the understanding to build this project. By this time, Devagowda was out and he did not like S.M. Krishna, both the same caste, both rival parties, both fighting for the same vote bank, Vokalega vote bank. So it was expected that there will be a rivalry. So in this case, what could have been a very vital urban project, a very vital project for a city like Bengaluru much earlier, much before today's crisis and much before what's being built right now was even thought of. If this infrastructure had come up in time, Bengaluru would have looked very different by now. But the fact is, it was held to ransom by Mufassil politics, because somebody who drew his voting power from the rural neighborhoods of Bengaluru. Rural neighborhoods means neighborhoods within about 100-150 kilometer radius, mostly south of Bengaluru. He was able to block one project so vital to the city. That's the reason we raised that question just a while back. Do the villages have disproportionate vote power and similarly the cities disproportionate money? Our original solution for this had looked like an idealistic fantasy, if not a flippant wish. Liberate the big cities from their colonial status, at least shift states' political capitals out of there, as America has done, for example. New York's capital is Albany, not New York City. California's Sacramento, not LA or San Francisco. Illinois is Springfield, not Chicago. What this means is that New York City, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Chicago, and so on, they are allowed to be free as autonomous cities. The cities would then be run by local bodies, if not powerful mayors, in the style of the US or China. If this could happen in India as well, that's our wish. For example, Maharashtra's capital could move to Sangli or Akola or any other such city. West Bengal's to Purulia, why not? Among the most backward parts of the state, Andhra's to Guntur or whatever. In fact, in Andhra, that needle has really moved. So we don't even know what capital Andhra will have. Vijayawada was chosen at one point, then dumped. Then the current chief minister, the incumbent who's now facing elections, he said, I will have three capitals. So all that tamasha has gone on in Andhra Pradesh. Karnataka's capital could move to Hubli. So liberate Bangalore. An added gain for India would then be the justification this would create for building new cities and a charming little incentive for the politicians to make arbitrage as property booms break out in these new capitals. The fact is, in India, we just don't like to build cities. The only real new city we built in India is Chandigarh, and that's not a big one. Maybe Gandhinagar outside of Ahmedabad, maybe New Raipur. New Raipur is a Sarkari city. Gandhinagar is also mostly a Sarkari city, although now there is an effort to build a new city there called Gift City, which is like a city for offshoring. The fact is, since we first proposed this idea 2 decades ago, things haven't stayed the same. All our cities have rotted even further, in some cases like Mumbai and Chennai, even faster than before. To be fair, Calcutta hasn't rotted further lately, and I find the idea of playing pleasant music at traffic lights quaint, even if not good enough to calm the nerves of stranded drivers. In fact, there's an old tweet that I'll share with you from a bright Mumbai-based Indian Railway Service officer, Anand Rupangudi, who said after watching Detective Byomkesh Bakshi that the movie set in the 1940s looked so realistic because Dibakar Banerjee did not have to do very much to give Kolkata a period look, because not too much has changed since the 40s anyway. Of course, quite a bit has changed in the suburbs, Salt Lake area and all that, but in the main city, very little has changed in so many decades. One thing has changed most visibly with so many of our cities, big cities. Their names. So we are talking Mumbai, Kolkata, Bengaluru now. And I don't know what the future of Hyderabad is, particularly if the government changes there at some point of time. All our big cities, Chennai, Hyderabad included, also have governments of parties different from a decade ago. So governments keep changing from time to time. The most important changes that call for us revisiting the idea that we relocate our state capitals out of these major cities are not these. First, in Narendra Modi, it was 10 years back, in Narendra Modi, we got our first ever prime minister talking unhesitatingly of the gains of urbanization and not bemoaning its sad inevitability as most of his predecessors did. Gandhi gave us the villages are virtuous, cities are sinful idea, and that created a problem. Gandhi's India lives in its villages rudely pushed aside Ambedkar's, but must it continue to do so forever? So 2 decades ago, when I first started asking for our cities to be liberated from their states, the buzzword in India was then President APJ Abdul Kalam's PURA, or providing urban amenities to rural areas. UPA politics was hostile to cities then, and the middle classes who lived there, cities developed, if at all, by stealth or collusion between local political and builder mafias. In Modi, for 10 years now, we have had our first leader since Ambedkar who holds out urbanization as a promise, as a virtue. Have we had adequate delivery on that promise as yet? I would say no. But we've seen a fair bit of change. If you look around Bengaluru, for example, you see a lot of changes coming up. It has started late, however, and it's a work that's progressing slowly, not fast enough. On Modi's own political CV, he proudly lists modernization of Ahmedabad Gandhinagar, where he's been developing a global financial center. He's got political investment in that he's actually, that's the only area where he's lifted prohibition, although with many qualifications. The restructuring of our electoral constituencies has also increased the city's political leverage. There is a new awakening and a sense of empowerment in the cities. You can see this also in Bengaluru and the way candidates of various parties are speaking in Bengaluru. In fact, from Tejasvi Surya to Rajiv Gowda, all the people you speak to, they are talking about urban issues as if this was a municipal election, because city voters now care about what's happening there, not just about the larger political issues of the day nationally or in the state. No surprise then that the first new political movement and force to rise in India in decades is entirely a big city phenomenon yet, the Aam Aadmi Party. It is in this environment that we check out the latest developments in many of our big cities. Bengaluru, for example. Bengaluru at this moment is going through a crippling water problem. In fact, talk to anybody in Bengaluru and they will tell you about water problem, tanker mafia, etc. In fact, that might be the subject of this week's national interest, which will go out as writings on the wall. The water crisis in India's fastest growing metro, in fact, in one of the world's fastest growing metros, that is Bengaluru. Mumbai has gone through its own upheavals. There was one young Maharashtra chief minister, that was Devendra Fadnavis. There was a lot of expectation from him. Among the first things he said was all multiplexes will screen at least one Marathi film at prime time. Then he rolled it back. Similarly, he initially put a total ban on eating beef and then rolled him back. Before that, late R.R. Patil, who I described then as the great self-styled slayer of Mumbai's dance bars. He put a ban on dance bars, and this has now gone through several iterations of court orders going right up to Supreme Court to effectively lift that ban. What does it tell us? It tells us that most of the politicians get their votes back in the countryside, in rural areas, because that's where the votes are. With those votes, they buy power. With that power, they come to the big and quote-unquote ugly city, big, bad, ugly city. But cities have money. That's why I said villages have disproportionate voting power, cities have disproportionate money power. So when politicians get political power through the votes in the countryside, they come to cities and then they want to encash that political power by vacuum cleaning the cities. And that's the reason our cities keep on suffering. And that is precisely the reason that we came up with this idea. And this idea, anytime you spend some time in any major Indian city, which is also the capital of that state, where the rulers get power by getting votes not in the city necessarily, but elsewhere in a much larger state, that city becomes the colony of that state, that state's politician. And that is the reason that we've been arguing, and Bengaluru today strengthens that argument that our big cities, our biggest cities, should be liberated from their states. That will also give states and their politicians to build new cities and maybe make a little bit more money or a lot more money from real estate development as these new cities come up. That is the reason the experience of Bengaluru also reminds us that this problem persists. This is a problem that afflicts every major city in India, which is the capital of its state. And that's why these cities have to be liberated and put under some kind of self-governance with elected, empowered mayors. The situation we have on the other hand is to the contrary. Mumbai has not had its municipal corporation election for some time. Bengaluru hasn't had its municipal corporation election for some time. In Delhi, the municipal corporation, if anything, has very limited powers. That's why this is time, and Bengaluru again reminds us of that, that India moves in this direction. Whether we want to take the leaf out of the book of the Americans or the Chinese, that's a choice we can make. But the direction is the same. That is, liberate your cities from being colonies of the states where they are located. Any which way, the message is still the same from Mumbai to Bengaluru to Kolkata, that liberate your biggest cities from being colonies of the states as whose capitals each one serves.